Hey, good morning, Reno. Okay. So this morning's passage is from Mark 1, 40 through 45 in the NIV. Feel free to take a moment to find it in your Bibles. All right. A man with leprosy came to him and begged him on his knees, "If you are willing, you can make me clean." Jesus was indignant. He reached out his hand and touched the man. "I am willing," he said. "Be clean." Immediately, the leprosy left him, and he was cleansed. Jesus sent him away at once with a strong warning, "See that you don't tell this to anyone, but go show yourself to the priest and offer the sacrifices that Moses commanded for your cleansing as a testimony to them." Instead, he went out and began to talk freely, spreading the news. As a result, Jesus could no longer enter a town openly, but stayed outside in lonely places, that the people still came to him from everywhere. This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God.
Good morning. Good to be here with you on this day. Many of the college students are still on their way back, so we're missing a little bit them, but some have kind of started to trickle in, and so thankful to see them here again. We're going to look at today's passage on Jesus' encounter with this man with a skin disease, and we encounter Jesus as the healer. And we began a new sermon series last week called Encounters with Jesus. And so we're looking at these various encounters that Jesus had with people, looking to encounter Jesus for ourselves. We want to meet with Jesus through these stories. But we're also looking with a view to imitating Jesus, how he engaged with people, so that we can do the same as we engage the world. And today, we're looking at an encounter that's found in Mark chapter 1 between Jesus and a man with a skin disease. At first glance, it looks like a typical healing story that you find throughout the Gospels, but it's more than that. This man isn't just suffering physically, but he's also suffering socially, spiritually, relationally, because he has been excluded. He is an outcast. So one of the most painful human experiences is exclusion. Some of us, we experience that maybe growing up, maybe in school playgrounds when kids would get gang up against you. You know, they would get others to be a clique, and then they leave you out, and they shun you in some way. And then we think about how solitary confinement in prisons is an especially painful form of punishment. Being deprived of human connection, being excluded from community, isolation, and shame. These were the things that this man with a skin disease was experiencing. So when Jesus encounters this man, he brings him healing, but it was more than just simply a physical healing. It was also the restoration of an outcast to a community with others and also with God. So we're going to look at this encounter in three parts. First, let's look at the meaning of the barrier, the separation between the clean and the unclean that the law of Moses commands. And then secondly, we're going to look at the misery of the broken, the shame and exclusion of those who are considered unclean. And then third, the mercy that breaks the boundaries. So let's look at, first of all, the meaning of this barrier. Why is this man an outcast from society? Because of an application of Leviticus. The law is found in Leviticus 13, from 45 to 46. And it says this: "Anyone with such a defiling disease must wear torn clothes, let their hair be unkempt, cover the lower part of their face, and cry out, 'Unclean, unclean!' As long as they have the disease, they remain unclean. They must live alone. They must live outside the camp." So what we need to understand about this law is that it's not about contagion, and it's not about moral guilt. Instead, it's about ritual impurity. So let me explain. Many people, when we read this, they assume that this law is there because leprosy, you know, we know leprosy, it's contagious. So if you can't be around other people, so people with leprosy needed to be quarantined and put into an isolation by themselves. And most English translations say leprosy, but that's actually not entirely accurate. We know this because in the Old Testament, non-Israelite people who have this skin disease aren't quarantined. They're not put away, shut away someplace. If they had leprosy, that's the correct procedure. An example is the Aramean general Naaman. Some of you know the story, right? He had this skin disease, and he received this healing through the prophet Elijah. And he was he had this disease, but he could actually be around other people, and he could go about his business and do his work as other people could. The disease disfigured him, but he wasn't excluded away from the community. So this issue actually isn't about contagion, nor is this issue about morality or guilt, right? This person sinned, and so therefore God has punished them. People with skin disease aren't commanded to make sin offerings in Leviticus. They're not commanded to make confessions of faith. Confessions of sin. Because there were those kinds of rituals were prescribed for people who had sinned so that they could be restored to the community. Instead, people with skin disease are told to go through purification rites that signify going from unclean status to clean status. Instructions for purification rites are found in Leviticus 14. So, this is kind of foreign to us, living in modern times. But in the Old Testament, especially in the book of Leviticus, there's a lot of attention that gets paid to unclean and clean. So if you're clean, you can approach the holy God. But if you're in an unclean state, you should abstain, you should stay away. Hence, there are all these laws, right? Avoid eating unclean foods, like pork, shellfish, that's considered unclean, and so you should abstain from them, and you shouldn't have touched a dead body recently, and you couldn't be in an unclean condition, like suffering from skin disease. So why were these unclean, clean laws here? What are they doing here? And so commentator on Leviticus, Jacob Milgram, explains that these laws were meant to teach Israel about holiness. It's a teaching tool for about God's holiness. Because what it's trying to teach is God is the source of life. And his dwelling place represents ordered, life-giving creation. But anything that visibly resembles decay or it looks like it's an intrusion of death, anything that looks like life unraveling does not belong in the sacred space. So you need to picture in your heads sort of the Israelite camp in the wilderness. At the center of the camp was a tabernacle. This is where God meets with his people. This is where heaven and earth are meeting. And around it was the community of Israel. And outside of the camp were the dead and the unclean. You see, the whole camp of Israel was a living diagram of God's holiness, right? So the reason that skin disease had to go outside of the camp was because it looked like life was unraveling in the body. The priests, they were called to diagnose the uncleanness, not so that they can punish the people with the disease, so that they could, exclude them from the camp temporarily. And it was always meant to be temporary. And it was meant to be protective, to safeguard, the symbol of God's holiness in the camp. It was never meant to be punitive or shaming. Restoration of the person with the disease, it was assumed, it was expected. And when it happened, it was celebrated. Hence, there are these purification rites. In other words, the law is saying, this unclean condition cannot coexist with the holy sanctuary of God, but return to community. Restoration with people and with God is possible. Here's where things went wrong. Over time, the meaning of this law was lost, but the law stayed. Israel, through the centuries, went through exile, occupations by foreign empires. And what they did was they responded by placing heightened importance on the boundaries that makes them a distinct culture. Practices that used to be symbols teaching God's holiness became identity markers to be protected at all cost. And the clean and unclean rules became something that started to signify moral worth. So, unclean came to mean worthless or evil, punishable. And because skin disease was visible, it became easy to demonize people with skin disease. So the thinking went, people who are suffering from skin disease must have it because they're evil, right? They must have done something wrong. They must have sinned. By the time of Jesus, exclusion was no longer temporary. If you're declared unclean by the priests, you're facing long-term isolation, economic ruin, exclusion from God. The law was now effectively being used to punish, not to restore. Right? What was meant to uphold God's holy presence had become an oppressive system that was shaming and shunning. So today, we can look at the story of this law and think it only applies to people a long time ago, involving obscure customs and obscure practices, and conclude, you know, this doesn't have much to do with us. This is not our problem. But think about it. Can a community today forget why a practice exists and make the practice itself absolute? We can do this. Think about how we worship. Many of you are too young to remember the worship wars, but for a long time, the church in the West only sang hymns, you know, the hymns that you find in the hymn books. And then, in the latter part of the 20th century, all these contemporary worship songs started to infiltrate the church, right? And so many of the old faithfuls, they were aghast. Oh my gosh, how could music so influenced by the secular world be used in holy worship of a holy God? And the church was going astray, you know, led by the world, they said. Now, never mind that the hymns were originally pop songs of the earlier times. You know, Martin Luther's A Mighty Fortress Is Our God was set to the tune of a drinking song that was popular in the taverns of Martin Luther's day. That's just an illustration for how we can fall into so many ways that we can exclude and stigmatize various groups in the name of righteousness. It happens with people with mental illness or addiction or disabilities. It happens with people from different cultures and races, with neighbors who are living in poverty, with incarcerated populations. It happens with immigrants and refugees who get blamed for our society's problems. And we can invoke God to blame the victim. They must have sinned. Look at how God has judged them. And then on the flip side, we must be righteous. Look at us. We're in the church. They are problems that need to be excluded and expelled, not persons to be embraced. That's the nature of the barrier, right? That's the problem that Jesus is encountering with this man. So let's look at, secondly, the misery of the broken. Living outside of the community, wearing torn clothes, crying out unclean, this doesn't just affect your body, it affects your soul. It dismantles your humanity. This man was cut off in every direction. He was cut off from worship. He couldn't enter the presence of God with God's people. He was cut off from human touch and human community. He couldn't engage in embrace or closeness, proximity with others. He was even cut off from his own humanity. He's no longer known by name. He's only known by his condition, the man with the skin disease. So this goes far beyond sickness. This is shame. Shame now can be a good thing. It can prevent us from taking ungodly actions. If we are shameless, then we just go ahead and do it, right? But it can also be used to enforce boundaries that God didn't intend, to define insiders and outsiders, us versus them, and to justify vilifying certain groups of people, blaming them when problems arise. And it is a way, it has no way of restoring people who have been cast out. This man with the skin disease doesn't abide by the barrier set up to exclude and lock him away in shame. He comes near to Jesus. You know, he's already breaking the law, right? He approaches Jesus, and Mark says that he fell to his knees and he begged Jesus. Notice what he says: "If you are willing, you can make me clean." He doesn't question whether Jesus can heal him, whether he has the ability to heal him. He says he questions whether he's willing to heal him. You know, what do you hear what he's saying? Would you be willing to extend your mercy to somebody who is so mired in shame, so shunned from society? That was his question. Would you be willing to besmirch yourself by associating with somebody so unclean? And he doesn't ask, "Make me healthy, Jesus." He asks, "Make me clean." He wants to be ceremonially clean. He wants to be restored to his community, and he wants to be restored to the worship of God. He wants to belong again. Now, maybe you caught this when we were reading the text, but Jesus' response is surprising. It says that Jesus was indignant. What does that mean? You know, he's filled with anger. Some manuscripts say that Jesus was moved with compassion, others that he was filled with anger. Either way, this is not irritation. It's moral outrage. Angry. Angry at what? At the man with the skin disease? That he was so bold as to speak to Jesus, let alone ask him to heal him? Now, we know that's not true because Jesus proceeds to touch the man and heal him. So what is Jesus angry with? Jesus is angry at a couple of things. He's angry at a world that's disfigured by sin. And he's angry at a religious system that has learned how to manage that disfigurement without restoring people. One, Jesus is angry at the evil in this world that has so thoroughly broken us, like this man before him. Jesus was raging against the fallenness of the creation that God had originally intended to be bursting with holiness, goodness, and with life. Now, it was in the grips of sin. It was in the grips of disease and decay and death. Jesus' anger was righteous anger at the ravages of sin. But then, he was also angry at the permanent exclusion perpetrated on this man by the temple priesthood. See, the law was originally meant to teach God's holiness, and the priests were tasked not only to diagnose uncleanness, but also for purification and for cleansing people who are unclean and restoring them into community and with God. But this man, he found no help from them. The religious system that was meant to cleanse and bring into communion with God only knew how to exclude and cut off. And finding no other recourse, this man comes to Jesus. So Jesus was filled with anger at the temple system that had lost sight of its original purpose, its mission. This is, you know, if you look at other places, this is consistent with another place. Jesus was said to be filled with anger in Mark chapter 3, verse 5. It says that Jesus was filled with anger at the stubbornness of the Pharisees because they were trying to use a man that had a disabled hand and see if he would heal on the Sabbath, right? So that they could find a reason to accuse him and say that he was breaking the law. You might have noticed that I talk a lot about the mission of the church. You're seeing Jesus very much focused on this mission. God's people and Jesus have a purpose in this world, and it's to mediate God's healing presence, to be an usher of God's grace in this world that's in need of God's mercy. Yet, we can drift from our mission the same way that the temple system in Jesus' day did, become border patrol that's interested in protecting our own interests, our own sense of righteousness, instead of bringing God's saving love to bear on those on the outside. We can get so preoccupied with who's in and who's out, debating rules and regulations about who's in charge and who has the authority and who calls the shots, who knows the right things, who has the right systems, and lose sight of the kingdom that's on the move in this world. Friends, Jesus invites us to join him in his mission of healing and reconciling and saving. The question is, will we accept? Here's the final part of the sermon. The mercy that breaks boundaries. What Jesus does in response to this man is surprising, actually shocking. Jesus reaches out and touches the man. Every alarm bell, you know, if there are observers at this time, every alarm bell should be going off in their heads, because according to the law of Leviticus, Jesus is now unclean, right? He touched somebody that was unclean, and he's now contaminated. And people should be, if people are all around, if they're watching him, they're going to be saying, Jesus, you're breaking God's law by touching this man. It's the same logic that's at work. In the parable of the Good Samaritan, do you remember this? You know, the Levite and the priest, they see this man who had been robbed and was left on the road to Jericho, and they pass by on the other side of the road, and what's going on there is that because priests who touch a dead body will become unclean, and they couldn't serve in the temple until they completed the purification rites. So in their eyes, it was a lawful thing to do to avoid this body that was possibly dead, right? They're keeping God's law. But Jesus goes ahead and breaks through the law, and he touches this man, this unclean man. And so what is he saying? There's a higher law that's at work than the law to keep yourself clean. It's the law of love. It's the law of mercy. Law of compassion for those who are hurting and cast out and shamed. That's the law that Jesus has come to live out. That's also what he's inviting us into. What happens next? It's another shocker. Immediately the disease left him and he was cleansed. So instead of Jesus getting contaminated, wholeness flows from Jesus into this man. In Jesus, holiness is not something that's fragile, something that needs to be protected, guarded from the impurities of the world. In Jesus, holiness is the thing that's contagious, not the uncleanness. It moves from Jesus outward into the unholy and to the decaying world and cleanses it. So often we have this view that Christian truth and holiness of God is something that needs to be guarded and protected and defended. That's why so many Christians view the world as a bad place that we need to separate ourselves from, because we fear contamination. But what if Jesus has the opposite view, that his holiness, his life, and his grace is actually the stronger power, that holiness flows out of him into this world to heal and repair and give life to what is unclean and impure and broken? Right? If we had Jesus' view, I imagine we wouldn't be so afraid of the world. I imagine we would go out into our neighborhoods with grace and compassion and embrace of Christ. I imagine we would reach out and touch ones that others call unclean, as Jesus would, because we believe that in Christ, God's holiness is contagious. And it's going to end up making the entire world whole again. That's why Jesus' people cross boundaries of exclusion and shame, not put up new walls of separation. As Jesus sends the newly healed, cleansed man away, he says something that's, again, puzzling. He commands him, don't tell anyone what happened here, and go show yourself to the priest and perform the purification rites according to the law of Moses. Now, I mentioned earlier about Jesus' anger possibly arising due to the temple system's failure of this man. And now, this would make sense in a larger drama that's playing out in the Gospel of Mark. And this is the brewing conflict between Jesus and the temple system. In Israel, the temple was at the center of the world. You know, it functioned the same way as a tabernacle in the wilderness years. The temple was the place where the heaven and earth met, where forgiveness was given, and where restoration was officially declared. Holiness was located in the Jerusalem temple, you see. No unclean thing should come near. People who are cleansed of skin disease had to be certified by a priest at the temple through purification rituals. But here's Jesus. He's far away from Jerusalem. He's far away from the altar. He's far away from the priesthood and the center of religious power. And he's cleansing this forsaken and forgotten man. Do you see the significance of this? This healing is not just compassion. It's a claim about where God now dwells. Jesus is carrying out the mission of the temple without the temple. He's bringing God's holiness that restores directly to the people on the margins, even to this man that's exiled in isolation, cut off from human community. And so he's in effect claiming, I am the temple's fulfillment. I am what the temple was always meant to be. But that means the Jerusalem temple is getting displaced. It's being declared obsolete. So Jesus, later on, he goes ahead and forgives sins without official temple sacrifices. And Jesus welcomes people that the priesthood never certified as clean. And they look at all of this and they're outraged. You know, who are you? You know, who authorized you to do this? You're not one of us. We never ordained you. Yet you claim to be all of these things that only the temple can be. And eventually, the conflict reaches its climax at the crucifixion. When Jesus tells this man to go and show himself to the priests, it seems at first like submission to the temple system. You know, go through the official channels and be restored, obey the powers that be to be made whole. But N.T. Wright, who is a commentator on Mark, says you can also read this as a challenge, a subversion. You know, the message can be go present yourself as evidence. Let the temple system confront the fact that God's kingdom is arriving without their control, apart from them. And it puts the priesthood on notice, into a bind. They have to acknowledge a cleansing that they didn't perform, right? The news that Jesus has come from God to be the temple himself fundamentally undermines the temple priesthood. No wonder they were upset. But Jesus tells this man to otherwise keep this quiet, possibly because the time had not yet come for him to go to the cross, and possibly because Jesus wasn't interested in gaining a crowd and a wave of popularity that he could ride into power. Instead, he was intent on the mission of God's kingdom, to proclaim good news to the poor, freedom for the prisoners, recovery of sight for the blind, to set the oppressed free, to proclaim the year of the Lord's favor, as Luke chapter 4 outlines. He was busy doing what the temple was supposed to do. Busy making this man with a skin disease whole. Busy making this world that's gripped by sin and death whole. And he's inviting us also to join him. So this encounter shows who Jesus really is. He's the healer that crosses boundaries. He's the holy one who moves towards the unholy, not away. His holiness is contagious. It flows out into this broken world and heals all that's sick and unclean. He is the living temple, bringing God's restoring presence to the outcasts. When Jesus comes to us, he landed squarely in the heart of unclean territory. Hebrews chapter 13 says this, verses 11 to 13. The high priest carries the blood of animals into the most holy place as a sin offering, but the bodies are burned outside of the camp. And so, Jesus suffered outside the city gate to make the people holy through his own blood. Let us then go to him outside the camp, bearing the disgrace that he bore. So this is the Jesus who touched the unclean man. And he still meets us today in our shame, in our isolation, in our longing to belong. He joined us in our disgrace and gave us his glory. He became sin for us that we might become the righteousness of God. That's the good news of Jesus. Do you believe it? To the extent that you believe it, you will have the courage to join him as he goes out to the margins and ministers to those who are scorned and shamed and forgotten. May God give us the courage and the compassion to join him. Let's pray.